This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 280 in the series. This session shows the Franklin Mass Finance Committee meeting held on Thursday, May 28, 2020. The meeting was conducted via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. This is the second of four budget hearings for the fiscal year 2021. The Finance Committee Vice Chair, Bill Dowd, opens the meeting. Each person who speaks is announced. The show notes contain links to the meeting packet and to the individual documents referenced. The Franklin School budget is the key item on this agenda. There is a good discussion in Q&A to help understand the drivers of the school budget. The Finance Committee, remember, approves only the top level amount. All the details are the responsibility of the school department and school committee. The recording runs about an hour and 24 minutes, so let's settle in and listen to the FinCom budget hearing of May 28.
Good evening, everyone. This is the May 28, 2020 Franklin Finance Committee meeting. And as a preliminary matter, this is Bill Dowd. I'm chairing the committee tonight in the absence of Michael DeFore. Permit me to confirm that all members and persons anticipated on the agenda are present and can hear me. Members, when I call your name, please respond in the affirmative. George Connolly.
I'm here.
John Grace.
Here.
Susan Doosnap.
Here.
Nicole Corbacero. David Moses.
I'm here.
Michael Kasberg.
Here.
And David Weick, who I believe had already indicated he wouldn't be here. I'll give him a chance to answer in case. David Weick. So right now we do have 6 members, so we do have a quorum. And I'm gonna continue on now. Staff, when I call your name, please respond in the affirmative. Town Administrator Jamie Helen.
Present.
Assistant to the Town Administrator Chrissy Welton.
Present.
Comptroller Chris Sandini.
Here.
Treasurer Collector Carrie Bertone.
Here.
Now have a document to read. This is an introduction to remote meeting. Good evening. This open meeting of the Franklin Finance Committee is being conducted remotely consistent with Governor Baker's executive order of March 12, 2020, due to the current state of emergency in the Commonwealth from the outbreak of the COVID-19 virus. In order to mitigate the transmission of the COVID-19 virus, we have been advised and directed by the Commonwealth to suspend public gatherings. And as such, the governor's order suspends the requirement of the open meeting law to have all meetings in a publicly accessible physical location. Further, all members of public bodies are allowed and encouraged to participate remotely. The order, which you can find posted with agenda materials for this meeting, allows public bodies to meet entirely remotely so long as reasonable public access is afforded so that the public can follow along with the deliberations of the meeting. Ensuring public access does not ensure public participation unless such participation is required by law. This meeting will feature public comment. For this meeting, the Franklin Finance Committee is convening by telephone video conference via the Zoom application, as posted on the town's website, identifying how the public may join. For Zoom meetings, please note that this meeting is being recorded and that some attendees are participating by video conference. Accordingly, please be aware that other folks may be able to see you and take care not to screen share your computer. Anything that you broadcast may be captured by the recording. Meeting materials. All supporting materials that have been provided to members of this body are available on the town's website unless otherwise noted. The public is encouraged to follow along using the posted agenda unless I note otherwise. Meeting business ground rules. We are now turning to the first item on the agenda. Before we do so, permit me to cover some ground rules for effective and clear conduct of our business and to assure accurate meeting minutes. I, the chair, will introduce each speaker on the agenda. After they conclude their remarks, the chair will go down the line of members, inviting each by name to provide any comment, questions, or motions. Please hold until your name is called. Further, please remember to mute your phone or computer when you're not speaking. Please remember to speak clearly and in a way that helps generate accurate minutes. For any response, please wait until the chair yields the floor to you and state your name before speaking. If members wish to engage in colloquy with other members, please do so through the chair, taking care to identify yourself. After members have spoken, the chair will afford public comment as follows. The chair will first ask members of the public who wish to speak to identify their names and addresses only. Once the chair has a list of all public commentators, I'll call on each by name and afford 3 minutes for any comments. Finally, each vote taken in this meeting will be conducted by a roll call vote. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we can move on to the agenda. We do have a quorum, as I stated. I do believe one of our members has signed on. Nicole Corpusaro, are you there?
She is, Mr. Chairman.
What's that? Nicole?
I think her microphone may not be working.
Okay. We'll give her a chance to chime in a minute. So this is a May 28th, 2020 meeting. Based on the quorum, I do call the meeting to order. And the first thing after that is public comments. Are there any members of the public or non-members of the committee who would like to make any comments at this time? Please use the raise hand feature on Zoom and I'll call on you. Seeing none, there are no public comments right now, so we'll now move on to approval of minutes. George Conley, our clerk, circulated some minutes from the December 17th, 2019 meeting. I'm now asking members if they've had a chance to review them and they wish to offer any comments, corrections, so forth. And if so, this will be the time to do it. If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded to approve the minutes, and now I'll do a roll call vote. First, George Conley.
Yes.
John Grace.
Yes.
Susan Doucette.
Yes.
Nicole Corvacero.
Yes.
David Moses.
Yes.
And Michael Kasberg.
Yes.
And I also vote aye also. That would be 7 in the affirmative, 9 in the negative. So those minutes have been approved. The next thing, we're on to the fiscal year 21 budget presentations. And before I turn it over to the town administrator, I just want to remind folks that we took a vote last night to defer all of our budget votes until the end of our deliberations. That's something we do every year anyway, so we won't be casting final budget votes this evening. With that, Mr. Town Administrator, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good evening to everybody. I just want to pick up where the agenda items are on item number 4, FY21 budget presentation. All of you on the committee know, and as we did last night, we did go through the remaining parts. We did make it through the general government line items of the town budget, as well as public safety. There was one individual who we did leave off so that we could come all in one evening. That's our information technology and technology director, Kim Raposa. And so if you look at the budget in tab 155, which hopefully Alicia is going to pop up on the screen momentarily. Alicia? Excellent. So just for the record and for everybody watching in tonight, the technology director and technology department is actually managed and supervised by the superintendent of schools. The line item before you this evening in department number 155 is actually the expenses to the municipal technology operations. And if you notice between FY20 and the proposed FY21 budget this evening, you'll see approximately a $30,000 request recommendation from myself to increase this line by about $30,000. And Mr. Raposa is able to speak towards what some of the budget drivers are, the cost increases that we're proposing mainly within licensure. As we all know, licensure just continues to go up every year. There is some other features in here, and I'll pass it over to Tim to let everybody know exactly what those increases are, as well as answer any questions that any of the members may have. Welcome, Tim. How are you?
Doing fine. Thank you very much. Greetings, everyone. My first town meeting via Zoom, so I'll do my best here. I'm looking at the document that on page 21. Is that what we're referring to? The budget materials, the 127 page document, because that's what I thought we were reading off of. Is this a different document here with the, because mine says it still has the 263,000 at the overall total, which I was. You're muted, Jamie. Sorry.
If you look over, you'll see FY20 budget 263,000, and then you'll see in the column to the right, department request, town administrator recommended request 293,693.
Right on the one screen. On the screen that you're projecting, but I'm just talking about the budget materials that I downloaded off the website. That's why I was just a little confused. Sorry.
Well, same information is supposed to be there. Just one of them has the narrative in it, and one of them doesn't.
Okay.
So, if you want, we can go to the next page, Tim. But if Alicia goes one more down than that,
yeah, that would help.
Line item breakdown.
Yeah. And actually, if you go down a little bit more, where it has the actual descriptions, but you don't have the descriptions on here. Okay, that's the one I was working from with all of the descriptions. But I mean, I can go over most of this anyway. I can't tell you exactly where $30,000 is because it's actually spread across. In the detail that I'm looking at. It's all of our licensing. The grand total of our licensing, for example, is about $221,000 out of the budget. So that we usually projected approximately a 5% increase on that across the board. Everything else pretty much stays the same. Whether or not we get 5% increases or 7% increases, we can't predict year to year. So that's we do a standard 5% increase in our licensing line items. I'm kind of caught at a loss to look at the exact numbers here because my detail is not matching. I apologize for that. If there's a specific line that you'd like to ask about, I can probably fill some of the information in.
Thanks, Tim. Anybody have any questions? Bill, you have to unmute your.
Yeah, I was scrolling through, Jamie, for any raised hands. I don't see any. So are there any questions from the members of the committee on the info budget? See any raised hands, so I guess we're all set on this one.
Okay, and if you have any specific questions, feel free to just shoot me an email, and I can do a little bit of research and get this straightened out on the detail. I apologize for that. Thank you.
Okay, Hey, Jamie, the next item on the agenda is the Franklin Public Schools.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just as a brief introduction, this is line item 300 in the town budget. So for those who may be following along in the budget book, there's a general line item in line item 300 for the Franklin Public Schools. But what we've also added into appendix B1 and B2 is the Franklin School Committee recommended FY21 budget executive summary, as well as the appendix B2 would be the Franklin School Committee recommended FY21 budget, which has been updated as of May 8th. I believe the superintendent of schools, as well as the members of the school committee and the school staff are here to make a brief presentation. And so without further ado, I'd like to pass it over to the superintendent, Sarah Ahern, as well as any of the members of the staff or the school committee. Alicia is going to just take a moment to take down the budget book and load up the slides. Look at that. She's ready to go. Over to you, Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Jamie. I am joined. I'm Sarah Ahern, the superintendent, the proud superintendent of the Franklin Public Schools, and I'm joined here this evening with a number of members of the school committee, including our budget subcommittee, Tim Keenan, Ann Bergen, and Jen D'Angelo. I did also see that Denise Spencer, MJ Schofield, Judy Pfeffer, and Elise Stokes are also on this call. And we have a number of administrators from the central office team here. School business administrator Miriam Goodman will also share some information tonight related to our school department budget. But we have Paula Morano, Director of Student Services, Dr. Joyce Edwards, Assistant Superintendent for Teaching and Learning, Tim Raposa, as you know, and just heard from, Director of Technology, Assistant Superintendent Lucas Jagir is also joining us tonight. I thank you for your time and attention and the interest that you have in the school department budget. I have a number of slides here that I'm not planning on going through each one, but did want to, with your permission, share a bit of context around the school department budget and go into a little bit more detail than I have in the past 2 years, because I think that there is some important background information and context about the budget in particular this year. Alicia, if you could forward it to slide number 4, that would be helpful. So our budget is driven by our vision and our mission, as well as our district improvement goals, and is a bottom-up budget that really is developed with input from our governing school councils, which are chaired by principals. And we take input from our administrative team and present a recommended budget in February to the school committee. And through an iterative process, we developed the budget that the school committee ultimately adopted in April. The school committee's adopted budget compared to FY20 represents an increase of $3.9 million from FY20, which was an allocation of $64,858,500. And the school committee's adopted budget ultimately was $68,767,863. This was a budget that started out as level service, and then giving some thought to some of the added critical needs we needed to introduce into the budget based on increased student needs among our population, we ended up with this budget, which is a 6.03% increase from last year. Alicia, if you could forward it ahead. In the previous slide, you saw the major budget drivers being listed out numerically. The biggest bucket here is our salaries. We also have health and Medicare costs, out of district tuition, other expenses and transportation, making up the bulk of our budget. Health and Medicare costs go up significantly each year, and our out of district tuition goes up We budget 5%, which is beyond what we can sustain on an annual basis. Alicia, if you could go to slide 8, that would be great. These are just for reference. Great, thank you. So this just summarizes the $3.9 million increase at the percent of 6%. There are pieces to this budget that we added, what we call the critical needs. And Alicia, if you would forward the slide. Most of these critical needs serve students on IEPs in our special education program. We have a number of specialized programs in the district that are designed to support individualized student needs. And so we were seeking to add in these areas in order to expand programming and our NEC partner program and our goals program, each of which serves students on the autism spectrum, but who have slightly different levels of need and profile. If you could advance it. We have increased needs among our student population for speech and language services, as well as registered behavior technicians in order to support some increased behaviors among the student population. We have a need to coordinate the transition of our graduates out of high school. You could continue forward. We proposed a REACH program coordinator to coordinate at the building level and support in this particular program that serves students with emotional and behavioral disabilities. And looking to add ESPs in both our STRIVE and GOALS program to support students there. In my time in Franklin, we have come forward and identified some critical areas that we have been unable to fund. And so these are not included in the budget, but I do think it's important to note for the community some areas and opportunity costs that we've identified. Alicia, if you could move forward. One area that we've sought to include in the budget but have been unable to and did not include this year are tech integration specialists, as well as curriculum specialists and technology replenishment. And I think it's important to note this, particularly in the context of the world that we're in today with respect to remote learning. I think our staff is doing an incredible job in pivoting our system, but this is an area that that we have been unable to support. And I think the needs are only going to increase in this area in the future as we adjust to this, I think what's going to be an ongoing situation. We have some very high class sizes at Franklin High School, and we've been looking to increase classroom teachers there, as well as provide more counseling support. But we've been unable to support that at the secondary level. We were able to support that last year at the elementary level. Alicia, if you could fast forward to slide 15. Just want to give you a little bit of context and comparison about how our budget and per pupil expenditure stacks up against the state average. The state average is $17,131 per pupil versus Franklin at $15,332, or a difference of 10.5%. Alicia, if you could go to slide 19. So just to sort of conclude, I want to recognize we have some data to share with you. If you have questions, we'd love to dive in and share a little bit more about the school department budget. But we are coming with a school committee adopted budget of $68,767,873, which varies from the budget that you see in your packet. included with the town administrator's recommendation of 65,658,500. I backed out in terms of it demonstrating an anticipated budget shortfall, backed out what is the community host agreement funds at 300,000, because they are specially earmarked and need to be applied towards specific areas related to substance abuse prevention. So wanted to, in building the budget, treat them a little bit differently on our side in terms of how we put the rest of this story together. But there is a budget gap still before you based on where we are with the budget. Jamie has identified that the governor's budget is what this has been built on, and the governor's budget came out in January. So we anticipated that there would be a budget shortfall and have been thinking about and planning for some ways to close that. At this point in time, and Jamie previewed this as well in his townwide budget message, and I've previewed it in the school community, you know, a real need, I think, to be planning for a scenario that gets worse. Given everything that we've heard related to revenue at the state level and at the local level, given the closure and the economic downturn that we're experiencing. We're not really sure what that looks like, and I know Jamie has kind of talked about that before. We're not really sure what that looks like, but a lot of people in education circles are talking about a potential reduction of 10%. So some of the assumptions later on are based on this reduction in 10% of local aid. If it were to be a 10% reduction in Chapter 70 specifically, the numbers would look a little bit different. But basically, right now, because of the school department budget cycle, we are beginning to think about the worst case scenario, which would be an anticipated shortfall of 5.4 million. And I just thought that it would be important to share that at the finance committee meeting so that you're aware of the financial situation and the circumstances we face. Jamie's budget message talked about the town needing to review the budget again in the fall and again in the winter. That is a very difficult thing to do in a school department. We have a school year calendar, and so we would have a very difficult time closing the gap at a later point in time based on the planning that we need to do for the fall and the school year, as well as some of our contractual obligations with respect to our staffing and notification about employment. So we are in a position at this point in time, and it was discussed at school committee on Tuesday night of coming up with a variety of recommendations from the school-based team to the school committee about ways in which we might close that gap. So I acknowledge we come before you with a gap. At this point, based on Jamie's numbers, 3.4 million, but if you add the potential reduction in local aid, it becomes more, closer to the tune of 5.4 million as an estimate in terms of the finances that we are presenting this evening. I have more information to share, but I think I'll pause there and ask and be happy to answer your questions.
Dr. Hearn?
Yes.
This is Bill Dowd, the vice chair. And before I call on any other members, I have a few quick questions.
Sure.
The first one might, I'm not sure whether it's best to be answered by you or Jamie, but on page 14 of the administrator's budget message, it mentions the Reform Act and the preliminary FY20, which is this year, net school spending, is 68.5 million. And then it goes on to say, Franklin currently exceeds the minimum spending requirement by just over $8 million or 76.5 million. Did either one of you explain that? That's not making sense to me, I don't think. We have a minimum that the set states for us, the state sets for us.
Yeah, I'm going to invite Miriam maybe to jump in and talk a little bit about how the state sets the minimum net minimum school spending and then calculates net school spending.
So the thank you. This is Miriam Goodman, School Business Administrator. Thank you for having us here tonight. The net school spending is set based on the foundation budget, which starts with the state determining what is an adequate amount to provide to the students of Franklin to provide an adequate education. They determine that amount per pupil, and then they identify how much the town can contribute towards that amount, towards meeting that foundation budget. Once they've taken the foundation budget and determined how much the community can provide, they backfill the rest with Chapter 70 aid, and that state aid, that Chapter 70 money, plus our local contribution comprises our net school spending. That's our minimum level of spending that we're required to meet the state's regulation in terms of spending for education. The differential that you see are things that the town contributes to education. So our budget certainly contributes towards net school spending, but the town also pays for items on behalf of the schools. For example, custodial fees and facilities maintenance, heating and electricity in our schools, snow removal, all of those kinds of things that the town does specifically related to school buildings, those items are on the town's budget. So the costs of those are attributable towards net school spending. And the town finance director and myself at the end of the year reconcile those items. There is an agreement in place between the town administrator and the superintendent as to how those costs are allocated on the town side and the school side to be able to reconcile that amount. And in the end, the town contributes, as you see, more than $8 million in excess of net school spending because of those things like custodial expenses, snow removal. There are health care benefits that the town pays for retired teachers. There are pension contributions. There are unemployment contributions. All of those sit on the town's side of the ledger versus the schools. And they're not included in the school's bottom line, but they are included in the town's bottom line as a whole. And so on an annual basis, we have to report those to the state Department of Education, and those things contribute towards net school spending.
Thank you. Two other quick questions. One is, I noticed the $5.1 million on out-of-district tuition. What does that go to?
So out-of-district tuition is used to support our students who access the curriculum in an out-of-district placement. They are some of our neediest students who are unable to access the curriculum within our schools, based on their special needs. So we will pay a tuition rate to a school such as, for example, Perkins School for the Blind to provide the services that child needs to be educated and to access the curriculum. And in total, that $5.1 million with circuit breaker offset to the tune of $2.7 million comprises our total costs for out-of-district tuition.
Thanks. And one more. SPED, is that Chapter 766, SPED, or is that a lot of different programs?
The acronym SPED refers to special education overall. Right. Under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, under IDEA, which I want to say that is Public Law 94-142 at the federal level. So, in addition, just basically indicating that the district is required to provide a free and appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment for students. So, at any point when we refer to SPED, it's kind of a shortened special education term. So there are similar to the to the tuitions we just spoke about, students who access the curriculum outside of our district, we also have programs that Dr. Hearn referred to in district, our REACH program, our STRIVE program, our GOALS program. Those are students with special needs who access the curriculum in a different program inside the district that we are able to accommodate their needs and meet their needs within the district. And by doing so, we are saving money on more costly out-of-district placements and at the same time providing students the opportunity to interact with their peers in their schools and stay in their neighborhood schools. And that's what that acronym refers to. And I don't know if Dr. Hearn wants to say any more about that.
I think Chapter 766 refers to Massachusetts, a Massachusetts component of the law. And so there are, for example, Chapter 766 approved schools that some of our students may attend as out-of-district placements.
Okay, thank you. Are there any members of the Finance Committee who wish to be recognized? George Connolly, go ahead, George.
Just one quick question. The number that always drives me a little loony, it's not a long ride, I might add, but is the student, the expenditure per pupil, we're at around 15 grand and the average is 17. Is that just a pure average? Because I'm looking at, you know, Martha's Vineyard spends $32,000 a piece, and there's a list, you know, all through the Concords and the Wellesleys and that spend obscene amounts, in my opinion. But so wouldn't a median or something be a better comparison than just a raw average? I mean, it's also got Waitley in there at $5,000 or some crazy number. I forget where it is. But I mean, down the Cape, they spend Wellfleet, 29, Thatha's Vineyard, 20 from the, I'm going to call it the average town, the non, quote unquote, rich towns.
So that's a great question. And I'll just jump in and say that there's the state average, and certainly you're going to have major outliers. You know, Martha's Vineyard has a tremendous amount of expense, for example, in terms of transportation costs. And their athletic teams, for example, who have to travel off island to play an athletic contest, among other factors that drive up their per pupil expenditure. Sometimes, and I would say very often, we might compare our per pupil expenditure to comparable towns. And so we have shared data, and it's actually, there's a couple slides in this presentation actually that do look at per pupil costs within the region. And Alicia, if you wouldn't mind jumping to slide
17.
We put together, and this is from the budget hearing presentation, a comparison of per pupil costs to nearby towns, which are part of either the Accept or BICO Collaborative, which is a group of districts that work together predominantly to provide services to students with special needs, but also on professional development and transportation. And so when we rank ourselves against area towns, some of which are towns that are quite affluent, but others that have demographics more similar to us, we would rank 24th on the list of 31 area towns. Alicia, on the next slide, there's also a comparison to, and this comes from our budget hearing presentation, our per pupil expenditure with respect to towns with similar student demographics. The previous slide was more regionally based in sort of the Metro West Blackstone Valley region. This is more across the state with similar student demographics, and we fall in the middle with that figure of about 15,000, depends on if you look in district or total expenditures in comparison to these towns that you see here. So that might be a fairer comp.
It always, when I look at them, and if you scroll down, we're kind of in the middle of all of them. We kind of land right in the middle. The other question I have, and I'd like the Reader's Digest version. How's that?
Sure.
I'm going to say 6-7 years ago, we had 6,100 students, 62, somewhere in that range, I forget exactly. And now we're at 51, 52? Am I close?
About 50, yes, right about 5,100, yeah.
I'll put it in the colloquial. If the next time I'm having a drink at Mai Tai at Hang Tai, and somebody asks me the question, how in heaven's name can you drop 1,000 students and see the increases? I'd like just, again, the Reader's Digest, I'm sure there was a million answers, but it just, from somebody, a senior citizen fixed income who, how do I explain that to somebody?
Sure. So we have dropped about 1,000 students over the last 10 years, but it's also been a time where the needs of students have grown tremendously. Our students are coming to us with more traumatic experiences from their childhoods. There is a greater economic disparity, so we have more students on free and reduced lunch. And greater polarization among the economics of families. We have an increased population of English learners. Our students with special needs, we're kind of average with the state in terms of the number of students who have been identified with special needs, but the complexity of those needs has really grown and really changed over time. Expectations from the state with respect to unfunded mandates have grown. The inclusion of technology, the expectations on the schools to provide a variety of social services and expanded social services like substance abuse screening, those have all increased demands on the things that we do. So while our enrollment has decreased and we have kept up with that with respect to classroom teachers, over time we have reduced classroom teachers K-8. And while maintaining class sizes within school committee guidelines, the number of counselors that we have has increased. We've had, in order to meet students' needs, we've added teachers of ESL in order to meet students' needs. There are other aspects in the system that where the costs are growing, even though the population of students is getting smaller.
Okay, that's the Reader's Digest version. Two more questions. Do we yet see an effect of the apartment explosion?
We really have not. So we have seen some students enrolling at Jefferson, for example, from the apartments on the Bellingham line, but the numbers have been really pretty small.
And the other ones aren't online yet downtown, but...
We have not seen much from enrollment there.
I'll yield to you in a minute, Jimmy.
Thanks.
The other question I have is, how thoroughly are SPED students vetted? I had a relative in the business who used to write EIPs, and she was always amazed at, I got to put this correctly, how people would demand SPED placement when it was just an attempt to get more attention for the child. Do we, how closely do we vet the SPED? I know what you're saying,
and I think that our teams do a tremendous job, and those teams include our teachers, they include administrators, they include those who are testing the students, as well as the families and the students themselves, really do a great job keeping in mind what the students need for a free and appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment. And I think that the success of our in-district programs and our co-teaching model is a testament to that. We do recognize that sometimes students need increased services that are outside of the district, but we do try to provide students with what they need in the district because we think that it benefits us all. including the students on the IEPs. There is a tremendous amount of data that goes into the decision making, whether it's objective quantitative data through formal testing or more observational reports that come in. There is a tremendous amount of data that goes into the decisions that get made by a team, and there's a really formal process to follow. We've also added interventionists at our elementary level. This budget includes interventionists at our elementary level, and the principals would also be able to speak to how our interventionists are intervening earlier and sooner with students. And by being able to intervene earlier with students, this ultimately can prevent, and they have some stories to show that the students are making progress, and it might prevent a referral in the future because we're able to kind of capture students and provide them with the skills that they need at younger ages.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Are there any other members of the committee who wish to be recognized? I see Jamie has his hand up, but I don't see any other members of the Finance Committee. So go ahead, Jamie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and through you, the committee. I just wanted to quickly respond to a discussion point that frequently comes up at the Finance Committee and many others in response to Mr. Conley's comment about the Dean out of Departments. A couple of things. Number one, I in the budget message document this year, I did put some population numbers. And just for the record, I want to state those. They're on page 6 and 7 of the budget message. But between 1981 and 1990, the town saw a 31% increase in population. Between 1990 and 2000, the town also saw a 31% increase in population of almost over 7,000 residents. Between 2000 and 2010, there was about a 10.5% increase in population. Between 2010 and 2019, the town of Franklin saw an increase in population of 1,600 people, or a 4.89% increase in population. The reason why I point this out is I know that there's a feeling throughout the community that there's a lot of development, there's a lot of building, and in some respects, however you want to message the people's opinions on that, it could be a lot of development in one person's view, and it could be a lot of development in another person's view. But we're doing another census, obviously, this year. It's 2020, so there'll be a local census, and then there'll be a federal one as well, where the numbers will come out a little further down the road. But I do want to dispel a little bit of a misnomer that somehow the town is growing exponentially beyond belief. And the simple fact is it's not. And Dean Ave is an excellent, excellent example of that. If you drive down Dean Ave, you know, with the way that that building is, aside from the facade and the look of it and what people's opinions may be on it, the truth of the matter is there's about 256 apartments being built in that building. All but about a baker's dozen of them are going to be 1 and 2 bedroom units, which is highly unlikely to drive a large increase in school-aged children in that particular development. There's certainly other developments within the community that will generate some school-aged children. But I think that over the last decade, we've seen a trend in the community towards development and maybe other social dynamics out there that I'm not going to talk to, nor qualified to speak in. But there has been a decline in the birth rate. There has been a decline in housing in this town. The superintendent and the school committee and the school staff did a great job on a demographics analysis that I believe is going to be updated again in the future. It was presented earlier this year. And really, at the end of the day, the dynamic that we have right now that the superintendent just spoke to is going to likely stay the course, where you have a dynamic where housing in the community is not actually driving in a lot more school-aged children. But at the same time, the expectations of the school department are growing exponentially. And you have this interesting dynamic where I don't think Franklin right now, despite the building you might see, is going to bring in a huge number of school-aged children. And the earlier analysis that the school department did showed that that trend is likely to continue for at least a handful more years. Meanwhile, the expectations of the department are increasing rapidly. But I just point that out to Mr. Comey's point for the record that we may see this development being built, the 12 units right in downtown, right next to the Maven Hair Salon, the four floors with the first floor commercial. Those are 12 units that I can guarantee you are not, based on the individuals who bought those units, are not producing any school-age children. There's a lot of housing in town that may be being built that is not going to drive up a huge increase in the student population, likely in the near future. This study was obviously done by the school department, and I'm analyzing this pre-COVID. You know, I don't know what that's going to do to the entire market analysis. When you look at that analysis, I believe the first bullet point assumption on that was assuming that there was basically no global economic disruption. Obviously, a month after that study was basically done, we had a global economic disruption, and that's expected to continue. But I did want to comment on that because it's something I frequently get talked about. When we talk about the enrollment numbers, it's something frequently that people bring up. So I appreciate the opportunity to comment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. Susan Doosnap has the hand up. Sue, would you like to say something?
Yes, I would. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Dr. Ahern. Thank you, Miriam. Over the past couple months, I've been sitting in on many of their meetings trying to get a much better knowledge base on what drives the school budgets. And it's amazing the amount of work that they do and what they manage. And I think we really need to put some context around what we're dealing with here. We have 5,100 students in our school system. That's huge. I mean, if we look at the list of towns, nobody around us is close to that. This is a huge school system with a lot of moving parts. I really want to thank Dr. Ahern for what she's done over the past 2 months. Nothing short of remarkable getting these kids up and running so quickly in the environment that we're in. So thank you for that. I do want to point out a couple of things, and I'm really appreciative of the questions that have been asked so far. I reached out to Dr. Ahern and to Miriam before this meeting, and you guys have already stolen some of my thunder. So thank you for some of your really pointing questions. This is 57% of our town spending budget. I want to let that sink in. I wish that we had more participation in this meeting tonight. This is 57% of our spending goes to our schools. It's really important. Something that I find a little daunting as well, I really want to point out the Chapter 70 money that comes to us from the state. This is before any kind of adjustments, and we know that there are adjustments coming due to the COVID pandemic that we're in right now. That projection originally was up $165,000. That's 0.6%. Now let that settle in for a second. Our tax levy allows us to go up 2.5%, 0.6%. This is a little scary to me that this is a trend that's been going on for a couple of years. If we go back to 2015, our Chapter 70 money in 2015 versus what was projected for 2021 before our COVID adjustments has only grown 4% in 6 years. We're gonna get into topics coming up in the next couple of meetings where we talk about benefits expenses growing much higher than that. So this is a really, really difficult situation we're in with our schools and to maintain some type of level services, I think is, I don't know. I don't want to, I'm going to leave it up to Dr. Ahern to continue her discussions, but I do really want to point out to people who are listening in, and I do thank the town councilors that have participated in so far tonight. We really, really need to spend a lot more time as a community discussing these issues because our schools are really going to feel this for the next couple of years. Dr. Ahern, just a very quick question because I'm sure you're not done yet. Will you get us, will you be talking to us a little bit about how you're trying to close that $3.4 million gap that you have right now?
Sure. And actually, I summarized it at the end. We have identified some areas to close in on the shortfall and we've updated our budget figures and come up with some initial reductions to recommend to the school committee as possible areas. And that those would amount to $1.5 million. In this list of categories, we will be receiving $123,000 through CARES Act funding. This is relief that is directed towards the schools for coronavirus relief funding. And so we could use that on a, it's actually a pretty broad spending category, but that is one-time funding that we would look to apply to FY21. We would prepay tuition for special education students. We have by law the opportunity to prepay tuition, and we've taken a look at our FY20 finances and identified ways in which we have lesser expenses this year and can prepay some of our special education tuitions next year. But that would create a bit of a funding gap for FY22. So that's worth noting there if we're unable to prepay those tuitions into FY22. We've adjusted some of our budget estimates based on our actual spending, for example, in the area of human resources and advertisement and our Wi-Fi contract. We've analyzed, as we do every year, we've analyzed our expected expenditures for FY20, and we will be proposing to apply additional revolving funds towards FY21. We have proposed two reductions from the critical needs area in the form of the REACH coordinator and the transition specialist. And we would propose to reduce services in the form of professional development and curriculum, as well as some supplies and materials in order to come to this $1.5 million figure, which would leave in the, as compared to the town administrator's recommended budget, a remaining gap of $1.9 million. Should state aid be reduced by 10%, that estimated shortfall of 5.4 would become 3.9 million. And I previewed to the school committee on Tuesday night that if we were to equate this to positions in the system, that those would equate to 25 positions at risk on average, because positions cost different amounts in the first scenario and 50 positions in the second scenario. So we're grappling with that at the current moment in terms of where our enrollment is looking, where we might be able to find some opportunities. But we did make some reductions in staff last year. We also had raised fees last year. So I think we feel a little bit like our options are more limited, and therefore more going to be more impactful ultimately on students when we have to reduce at this magnitude.
Y'all set, Sue?
Yes, one more question if I could. Oh my gosh, it just escaped me. This is what happens when I try to multitask with the computer and actually think. Just a quick comment, Dr. Hearn. You had also sent me some very good information on our average teacher salary. And I did want to note, because I do believe it came up in a different meeting. So the average teacher salary that we have right now in Franklin is roughly 74 to 75,000 is what you're using as your estimates?
Yes, those come from the Department of Education who collects that data.
Okay, and that is above or below the state average?
That is below the state average. I'm trying to pull that up right now.
Yep, I can see that. I really just wanted to make that point as well, that, in terms of what you're managing and even keeping these excellent teachers in our school system, we're doing great things here in Franklin. And as we start to if, heaven forbid, if we lose some of these teachers, to replace them is going to cost us probably more money in the current environment, just to give you an idea. So, oh, I wish I could think of what my original question was. It was a good one. It'll come back to me.
Susan, you're all set. I don't
No,
see
no, it. No, if I just thought of it. Thank
okay,
you.
Well, go, let her
so many things going on right now. Thank you. Dr. Hearn, could you just confirm how many teachers we lost in fiscal year 2019?
From FY19 to FY20, we had a reduction of 14.9, 13 of which were classroom teachers.
Okay, that was my original question. So thank you, that did come up. And our average payroll is, our average per teacher is below the state average. So, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Susan. Still no other hands raised, so I guess we can move on to the next budget item. Mr. Helen, the Tri-County budget?
Sure. If I may, Mr. Chairman, I just want to, may want to just offer an opportunity for anybody else who's on the call to maybe ask any questions of the school department. I see that George Conley's streak has, looks like it might have ended, and we've got some other folks there, if you're so willing to, Mr. Chairman. If there's any other questions.
Sure. Yep, I keep searching for raised hands, and it's open to anybody who wants to ask something or make a comment.
Okay.
Still drawing nothing, Jamie.
Yep. Maybe if I may maybe ask if in general, if there's any other comments the school department wants to bring forward, or the school committee, or anyone else. I guess I'm in the same boat
hey,
with Mr. Raposa too. You know, this is, these first Zoom calls are strange on these kind of hearings.
Yeah, it's an adjustment. I would love to take an opportunity just to thank the finance committee for hearing about our budget and hearing our presentation this evening. You know, to Sue's point earlier, about Chapter 70 funding. She talked about the 0.6% increase from last year to this year at a time when the state, from a policy standpoint, was making big changes, sweeping changes, sweeping legislation in acknowledgement that they weren't funding education adequately, and that the cost to educate a child has gone up dramatically. And that goes and sort of, I guess, is external validation of the point that I made to Mr. Conley about the cost of education just going up, and the state recognizes that. However, the Chapter 70 funding did not go up, you know, for Franklin, you know, to a large extent. And as Sue pointed out, it was 0.6%. So just thought I would add that component. Thank you again very much. We appreciate all of the questions and you know, the thoughtfulness that you put into the review of our budget.
Thank you.
Thank you. And
for all your work and your staff.
Thank you.
And through you, Mr.
Chairman.
Chairman,
if I could.
Yeah, go ahead.
Please. I'm so sorry. I'm not sure if my raised hand is showing up on your screen. If I may, just one more question.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Ahern, could you quickly give us an update on the facilities study?
Sure. The facilities study was a preliminary quantitative component of the facility study was presented to the school committee, not at the most recent meeting, but 2 weeks prior. About 2.5 weeks ago, the architect came and talked about the adequacy of the K-8 buildings, as well as the capacity of the K-8 buildings based on MSBA standards. He is currently working on his final report, which will include a bit more analysis and some preliminary or some recommendations. And we anticipate that that will come before the school committee at the June 9th meeting.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
You, Mr. Chairman, if I may, Jamie?
Absolutely, Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just a couple quick points that the superintendent just touched on that I do want to mention. So next week, there'll be the town council agenda will be coming out momentarily. And we do have some one of our kind of twice a year visits from our legislative delegation. We'll be attending on June 3rd at 7 o'clock, and that will include certainly Senator Rausch, but Representative Roy, of course, who's our lone member in the House of Representatives, and keeps in touch with us very closely on what's going on up there, as well as we're fortunate enough to have Senator Stoker represent us, who's the Senate President. I think that that's an important discussion for folks on this call to tune into. I don't expect any final announcements of when the state budget can be done, will be finalized, but I have talked to them, and due to my previous legislative experience working up there, I can say that, it'll certainly be a long summer up on the Hill, and we hope to have some adjusted numbers, on local aid by around Labor Day. We very well may be knowing some of the local aid numbers before that, but I would still hesitate due to the way the state formulas work in a myriad of accounts, not just Chapter 70, but I would also caution against just getting that number right up front and then assuming that. I do believe that given the severity of the budget revenues that the state is losing, it's advantageous for us to at least see how this all plays out and at least mentally and conceptually believe that around Labor Day, we might be getting a final state budget. And the last thing I would mention the superintendent just touched upon was another reason why the importance of having Senator Stoker on the call next week is she was really one of the main drivers, if not the author, of the Student Opportunity Act that was passed last November. And I've known Senator Stoker for almost my entire career, all the way from back to the state representative from Ashland. And she truly has really worked on this issue for decades. In a lot of ways, I think it's heartbreaking that he's worked so long for this and was able to get an omnibus package to address a lot of the issues that the Franklin Public School District is facing, but also what Superintendent Hearn mentioned a minute ago, the bigger statewide education funding issues. And that was to be phased in this year, beginning this year, over a 7-year phase-in. The fate of that legislation and what they are going to do, I think anybody would assume that they're going to scale that back to some degree, but we still don't know all the policy decisions that are going to be made out of that, whether they're going to try to still achieve some of that and maybe shift other accounts around. And so there's just a tremendous amount of balls in the air and uncertainty revolving around the state budget. And as I mentioned last night at the FinCon hearing as well, there's an FY20 budget the state also has to finalize and look to patchwork up. I do know that Senator Stoker and others have committed to the local aid number that was in the FY20 budget. The state has about $3.5 billion in their rainy day fund. I do not expect that to solve a lot of problems, both really in FY21, as I think a lot of that would probably be used to help with FY20. And ultimately, the Mass Taxpayers Association predicting a $6 billion state revenue loss. So, I think we're going to be patience is a virtue here. Hopefully we'll find out next week on Wednesday on June 3rd, be able to have a public discussion with our legislative delegation that I hope will bring in some additional information as we move forward over the coming weeks. And just wanted to make sure everyone was aware, it's June 3rd next week at 7 p.m. Our legislators will be at the town council meeting. So hopefully folks can join us then. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it. Well, seeing as how he passed it over to me anyway. Alicia, thank you so much. Just to move on really quickly to finish off the education portion of the town's budget, up on the screen is Department 390. And then after that is also the Norfolk Agricultural School. What we have before us is the Tri-County Regional School. Based on what I just said, this is a formula that is essentially goes through a state formula process based on the amount of kids from Franklin that go to Tri-County. I believe the count this year is about 170 is what they predict of Franklin students going to Tri-County. As I mentioned last year, one thing for the Finance Committee to be aware of, and it's still in the works, but the Tri-County Vocational Regional School is attempting to do a rehab of the whole building, which will require at some point a debt exclusion, which will be a vote. They're currently still working with the Mass School Building Authority on whether or not there can be some cost sharing there. But that is an issue from a capital perspective that is a little different than the normal operating budget for Tri-County. Ultimately, all of that is baked into this number that's in the budget right now, the $2.5 million. If you notice from last year, the budget actually went down about $10,000, about $9,000 from last year, probably based off, you know, a half a student that was, you know, mixing and matching students in and out. And so that's the situation with Tri-County. There's really not a big decision here for the Finance Committee. It is what it is. We just do and extend what we're required to do under the regional agreement between the 13 towns and the Tri-County Vocational School District, as well as the state formula process. That same argument, or the same narrative that I just said, also applies to the Norfolk Aggie School, which, Alicia, if you could go down one more. Yep. And so here you see a slight increase of about $2,000 or $3,000 from the Norfolk Agricultural Vocational Education Tuition Assessment. Again, this is all formulated through a state formula process through the state budget and in our regional agreement with those other communities to be part of the Norfolk Aggie. What is remain to be seen in talking to both Steve and Tammy, the respective superintendents of those schools, is what the job market looks like now, whether or not those schools will be more attractive to other students, depending on the jobs that are out there and depending on the where the economy goes. My staff and I usually go to, and the other town managers usually go to once or twice a year meeting with each of those superintendents that they hold at those schools to give us updates. And obviously, as those vocational institutions move forward, it's unknown whether they'll be more popular and whether this will draw more resources away from the towns or the inverse. So it's certainly another issue in addition to the capital infrastructure. The Finance Committee will be hearing more about from those two institutions over the next year or two. So I'm happy to answer any questions from the Finance Committee members, and I'm sure with the experience that Dr. Ehrman has had, or Miriam especially, might be able to answer any questions from those two line items as well.
Yeah, Jamie, I got lost for a minute. I'm back. I'm not seeing any hands up. You're still talking about the Tri-County?
Hey, Bill. Yeah, we just did Tri-County and the Norfolk Aggie Vocational School, which was $47,250 assessment for the county.
Two birds with one stone. Great.
Two birds with one stone.
I'm not seeing any hands up. Is there anybody who wants to have any more questions or comments, whether they're FinCom members or anybody else? Susan, your hand's up.
Yes, my hand is supposed to be up, so thank you. Jamie, and possibly Sarah, question for you. And, you know, I think this discussion tonight is a lot different than the discussion we had last night, because we are actually talking about potential cuts to personnel. And since we're in such an odd budget cycle this year, and a lot of our deadlines have been pushed out, mm-hmm. if headcounts do need to be reduced, is there a date as to when that decision has to be made?
I'll take it. That's a really good question. I would actually defer to the superintendent about anything that
we do have dates that we have to meet. So there's a statutory date for for folks who are in our professional ranks without professional teaching status. So that's within the first 3 years for non-renewals. And that statutory date is June 15th. And part of our collective bargaining agreement has a notification date related to reductions in force. And that notification date is also June 15th.
Okay. So even though we're talking about, and again, I'm not sure who I'm asking, if I'm asking Vicki or Sarah, if we're talking about kind of doing this budget in two phases, I mean, could we be looking at two levels of cuts? Or
so from how, I think I know, I'm sorry, I cut you off, but I think I know what you're asking. And from a school department's perspective, I think we're going at this in two different ways because of our timing requirements, as well as the planning for the fall. Our contract also has recall provisions in terms of how we would potentially notify people and then bring people back based on a more favorable situation once certainty is more known in terms of where the state budget lands and falls. So there are some recall provisions that would go into effect.
And can you clarify that for me, what the recall provision?
Sure. So basically, if somebody were to get notified that there was a reduction in force due to the economic circumstances, and then we ended up with not as much of a not as big of a state aid cut. Let's say state aid was cut at 5%. The school committee would have a list of things, positions to bring back, and there is a process by which, through the collective bargaining agreement, people would be brought back into those roles.
All right. Thank you.
Well, if I may add, Mr. Chairman, he brings up a good question, and I actually don't know the answer, and don't know if the superintendent might have any. I don't think we actually know yet what the entire fall looks like, or whether or not some of these decisions, maybe not the collective bargaining process, but from the state process, you know, if they get a, normally in this year, their budget is required to be done by July 1st. And it's important because it is an election year at the state level. And so normally their legislative session ends on July 31st, and the year is kind of built off of that. Some of these other deadlines about, you know, given the situation we're in, I don't know if they'll extend anything out or if we're going to get news later because the budget's going to be done later. There may certainly be some special deadlines or dates that are put into the state process. That's one of the questions I hope to ask out of the legislators next week, to put the Senate's bill there to see if there's any information that we can get on that.
It's a good point. It's a very different times. And you mentioned that, Jamie. I'm wondering, is something, I'm not sure what the legal requirement as far as, could they pass, is there such a thing in the state or even the municipality as an interim budget? Maybe you just got to get a full 12-month budget.
It's a great question. There was state authorization to allow towns to do 1/12 budget.
Mm-hmm.
And in consulting with our finance team, and this is a unique thing in Franklin, where because we have a town council form of government, you know, we could come back every month and adjust the budget if we wanted to.
Right.
You know, and so I thought it was, we felt it was more important to move forward with a framework and a blueprint which to work from. And then come back, you know, when the facts were all out on the table, and to see what things look like, as opposed to just continually coming back and hoping for these 1/12 budgets. I have found that even in towns with town meeting and talking to a lot of my municipal colleagues, they've also resisted the 1/12 budget. And part of this really revolves around assumptions that no one has any clue what they really are. I'm on an email list for the Norfolk town managers group, who's fantastic, and we share ideas and what are you doing, what are you assuming for meals tax, you know, decline, what are you assuming for local aid decline, all this stuff. And if you really look at a spreadsheet, you know, all of us are predicting, you know, a 15 to 20% reduction in some of this revenue, like we did in local receipts, but how we get there is all different. And I think that even though the statutory language went through, I don't think you're going to see a tremendous amount of towns, particularly towns that have regional school districts and other dynamics, do the 1/12 budget because it's just too much analysis in such an uncertain time. And that's the way our finance team felt was, you know, we also need to give some breathing room here. We talk about this often at the council level. We have no secret of the data in the town of Franklin. We currently have 22 active cases in Franklin that have COVID that are in isolation. And I think there's a sentiment at some point, we also have to see how the economy rebounds here over the next, over the summer, and to see if local revenues maybe tick up a little bit more than what we anticipated, and to see where new growth is. As Mr. Conley had pointed out earlier, there is still a fair amount of construction going on in town that will result in new growth at some point when those units are done or the commercial industrial buildings are done. There are still businesses coming to Franklin, and I've had at least one or two calls a week with business owners looking to expand, buy a new building, take five spaces, make it into one, and they're working themselves. And I think by giving at least a few more months, we'll hopefully have a better idea of where we stand with this public health crisis, and we'll have a better understanding of where the confidence in certain sectors in the economy are, which have a large result in driving our revenue, in particular the meals tax, the hotel tax, and new growth with construction. You know, the hotel tax is an interesting one too. I mean, we're expecting a 50% decline in hotel revenue, and there's really not a light at the end of the tunnel in that industry into when they're going to be opening back up at full capacity. So there was authorization to allow us to do that, but we felt this was the best way to go to give everybody some space for a few months to see how things shake out.
Thank you. Sue, do you have something else? Your hand is up.
My hand's still up.
Yeah, you must be tired.
I'm on a different computer tonight, so I apologize. I was more versatile with it. But I would like to ask one more, or maybe just make one more statement, if I may.
Sure.
You know, because again, we have been predicting that we would get to this point. Put the COVID aside.
Yep.
Okay. Let's talk about our budget in two phases. We've been talking about getting here, and we're here, and it doesn't feel good at all. And I think as a community, we all have to start talking about this, because even once COVID comes and goes, right, and we're still going to have this budget shortfall going year to year to year, and it's really going to be impactful to the schools, and pretty soon it's going to be impactful to the rest of our municipal services. So I really do, again, I'm thankful for anybody who's listening into this, but I do think we need to have some more discussions. I know we've got the issues coming up with reductions in state funding due to COVID, but even without that, we were going to get to this point. And unfortunately, we're going to, I hate to say it, but we're probably going to be looking at less heads in our schools going into fiscal year 2020. And I just find it very, very disappointing. So, but thank you. Thank you. I'm going to stop talking.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to take my hand down.
I don't see anybody else offering any comments or questions. I do want to thank people for tuning in. Like last night, I noticed we have probably, in addition to staff and committee members, probably at least another two dozen people, quite an all-star lineup of school committee members and town councilors. So thank you for tuning in. And without any other questions or comments, I would now like to ask somebody to make a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, the motion's been made and second to adjourn. And I will have to take a roll call vote on that. George Conley?
Yes.
John Grace?
Yes.
Susan Doosnow?
Yes.
Nicole Corbacero?
I heard a yes.
Yep, I heard it too. David Moses?
Yes.
Michael Kasberg?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well, so that's 7 in the affirmative to adjourn the meeting. Thank you again, everybody. Thanks to the committee, and certainly to Jamie, you and your staff, and Dr. Hearn and her team, too, again. Very impressive. It's challenging times, but we have good people in here, so I guess we'll have to figure it out. So thank you, everybody. Good night, and I'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Manana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.